Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
We've got good news. The world is open again, and people like you, people of faith, are traveling to Catholic sites around the world. Want to travel with exceptional Catholic leaders this fall, next year, or in the future? Are you looking to see specific sites, celebrate traditional Latin Mass, or travel to destinations without vaccine requirements? We are here to help you deepen your faith on pilgrimage. Give us a call at 1-800-842-4842 or visit us online at selectinternationaltours.com. Select International Tours is your pilgrimage company, and we have the perfect Catholic trip for you.
Are you looking to serve God and society? Consider putting your gifts to work as a lawyer. Ave Maria School of Law has been educating faith-filled lawyers for over 20 years. Ave Maria School of Law is committed to training lawyers to use law appropriately around the moral issues of our time. Visit avemarialaw.edu to learn more about integrating your faith with a law degree.
Warning, the Catholic Man Show contains high levels of manliness. It's simple, really. You either want to grow in virtue and holiness, or you want to be a sissy, whiny baby. If you choose to move forward, grab your whiskey glass, because the Catholic Man Show is starting right now.
Welcome to the Catholic Command Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side, so raise your glass. Adam Minahan here, sitting in studio with our best friend David Niles, best friend Juan Posada. We have another best friend, a friend of the diocese. I'm really excited to have him on. Ever since I started working for the diocese, I've been eager to get our guest on today. We have Mr. David Dean. David, you have known by a lot of different things.
Yes.
Husband of Lori.
Correct.
And probably your most famous one.
Yes.
You're also the superintendent of Catholic schools here in the diocese.
I am.
You're also a godchild of John Sr.
That is correct.
You are...
No kidding?
Did you not know this?
I don't know if I knew that.
Yeah, you had to have known this.
I probably did know that.
He just forgot.
He probably forgot. You were at one time a basketball coach.
That's correct. Yes, basketball.
Volleyball coach.
Volleyball coach.
Girls volleyball.
Girls volleyball.
You coached my mother-in-law.
I did indeed.
Yeah.
I did. I tried to get her into the Olympics.
Yeah. She didn't get there.
She was focused on her studies. She had a priority straight.
Terrible choice.
But no, David, I'm so excited to have you here on the show. I appreciate you carving out time to hang out with us this evening.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to talk about a topic that has been something that I know Dave, Juan, and I have spent many hours out in the backyard discussing. And I think that it's a topic that if you haven't discussed it yet as a young father or a guy who is engaged or preparing for marriage, something that you need to think about seriously, which is when you have children, if God has blesses you with children, how sports is going to affect your family life, how you are going to raise your child in sports or not in sports, what the pros are, what the cons are, how you have to give up a little bit to make some things happen, figuring out what the highest good is for your family, all sorts of things.
Yeah, it's really difficult today. Extremely difficult. Sports is like an elixir.
Right.
We like to drink from it, and it does strange things to us sometimes.
Yeah, and it can cause you to get your priorities off kilter and very quickly without even realizing it.
No, that's right. That's right. It just pulls you in.
Right, yeah. So it'll be a good discussion, but before we do, we're going to have a whiskey that we've had before, but it's... marketed in a specific way that I wanted to make sure to highlight it. Dave, will you grab the can there? So this is Ardbeg Anoa. We've had this before. However, this is the barbecue smoker edition. Like I said, this is a marketing ploy, but it worked, obviously.
Yeah, because the whiskey is just...
We bought it.
Anoa.
Yeah, right.
No, it's not like a smokier version of the Anoa.
That is correct. That is my understanding. Mm-hmm. But what it comes in is in a case that actually has a little canister to put wood chips in that you can place in your barbecue grill. So if you have a gas smoker, you use charcoal, and you don't have an actual smoker, but you have a grill, you can put these in there. My dad does this all the time with what he uses,
especially if you're using gas.
Right. That way, it gives it a little bit of a smoky
real flavor. Charcoal flavor.
Yeah. So anyway, it's one of those things. Like I said, it's kind of a marketing ploy, but if you're looking for one,
also this can, if you take the bottom and the top off, and if you are lucky enough to own a bazooka, this actually functions as a silencer. This is a...
Oh.
Yeah. The can itself is a bazooka silencer. For those of you... For those of us who have a bazooka...
I think that's important
it's
when
a
you're
self-defense,
shooting it in the neighborhood.
It's a self-defense bazooka, okay?
Okay.
You never know.
You get fewer complaints.
Right, when a dragon might attack or something, and you'll be like, it's a good thing I have the bazooka.
So Ardbeg is known, it's an Islay whiskey. It is known to have the a smoky, sweet, peaty taste to it.
It's like a cousin of Laphroaig. I buy more Ardbeg than anything.
Because it's cheaper.
It's cheaper, yeah.
Yeah, but so if you're not familiar, in Scotland, Ardbeg, Laphroaig, and Lagavulin are all within a like 5 mile linear path.
I haven't had the Anoa, though, in a long time.
So we're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers.
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 Cheers. Mm-hmm. Color is kind of a pale, cloudy yellow.
Kind of typical of Ardbeg, I think.
Yeah.
They tend to have a lighter color.
It has a nice nose on it. If you like peat, this is good. And this is the time of year. I know Dave is not a time of year whiskey guy, but this, to me, is the time of year. We're getting into the time of year of peaty, smoky scotches. Mm-hmm. The cold weather, the weather's changing, fires in the fireplace are being lit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's just the way to go, in my opinion.
Pinion in there.
Little pinion wood on the in the chimney. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And sit outside with a cigar. And
so this is sherry cask.
Is that why it has a little...
It says PX Sherry and First Fill Bourbon.
Okay. It does have a little sweeter on the nose. Mm-hmm. But if you like peated scotches, Ardbeg is one that you're not going to be disappointed with.
Yeah.
That's very good.
And, you know, like the 10, it's like $50 in that range, very close.
This one is only 60.
Really?
So, yeah. So it's
for some reason, I thought this one was like 70.
Nope, this was 60. So
that's not bad.
It's a nice, change on the in pace,
right.
But only $10 difference.
Uh-huh.
I dig it. The barbecue with it,
and you get a little barbecue grilled chip.
Yeah,
I mean, why not?
Yeah. So, Dave, we are
there's safety instructions.
Good, which is always nice to just throw them away. Just don't even look at them.
You don't want to get injured by the.
You don't need those.
Is that for the grill or the bazooka?
That's a good distinction.
You have a bazooka. You don't need safety instructions. I take that back.
Dave, so it's good. We've been getting some new listeners. We're on a few new radio stations.
Yeah.
It would be good just to rehash why we drink on air. What's the purpose?
You know, we haven't done that in a while.
We haven't done that in a while. And so every time we... You know, every time we go a while and new people start listening, the first thing they always say on the show as a feedback is...
How come you don't talk about the topic?
Right. So,
so
it's good to, good to start
every
out.
Episode we do three things. We highlight... The first thing we do is open, review, and enjoy a manly beverage. We're doing that right now. It's going swimmingly so far. The second thing we do, typically, is we will highlight a man gear of some kind. This is just dude stuff. Things that are in your garage. And we want to talk about, hopefully, why they're manly... if a thing is said to be manly, then there must be something we can learn about manliness from the virtues of the thing that we're talking about, right? So, and then finally we have a topic, a discussion on manly things.
Whatever we decide.
It's the man show, so everything, it's all about manly things.
Yeah.
Virtue.
And if you are one of the new listeners, you should be warned. Here on the Catholic Man Show, we are dealing with very toxic levels of authentic masculinity. So if you or anyone in the listening radius is susceptible to high levels of manliness, please be warned. The show will be harmful to your health.
Also,
sounds like a government warning.
There we go.
Yeah. I also didn't give you another title that I forgot to introduce. Our Latin teacher. We have talked on the show that we've been.
This is the guy.
He's the guy that's teaching us Latin.
Salvete.
Salve.
Salve.
Quo modo velitas.
Si.
Optime.
Optime.
Bene.
Bene.
Es problema.
Es problema. Magna.
I didn't say I was doing well in the class. I did not claim that.
But we don't give grades, so it's okay.
Maybe a good way to start, David, is to talk about virtue in general. When you were talking, you gave a talk last week at Christ the King, Parish of Christ the King, on this topic of virtue in sports. And you asked a question on what, in Latin, what does virtue mean? And I actually answered it, but you didn't hear me. And then a couple of people pointed at me.
Was that right?
After you gave the answer. But I didn't want to,
You're humble, right?
I didn't want to toot my own horn.
Yeah, but
humble.
Except that now that I have a podcast and a platform in which I can... Mm-hmm.
I can do it to a lot of other people.
Very publicly, I am taking advantage. Yes.
So what does it mean in Latin? What does virtue mean in Latin? Vir.
It comes from the Latin word vir, which means man or power. And so it's Cicero in his Tusculan Disputations referenced this, the root of this word, and that one of the qualities of being a vir is fortitude.
Mm-hmm.
And so hopefully we men will manifest those qualities of fortitude through virtue, which is a strength, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a wonderful word, actually. There's actually a feminine version of it, which some people are not aware of in Latin.
Okay, which is
Virgo.
Virgo.
Virgo, not Virgo. Though who knows, maybe a connection there too. But it's kind of interesting. But I know this is the man show, so we're going to talk about vir.
Yeah,
and virtue.
So it's like virtues are the powers of man, essentially.
Yes, yes. Uh-huh. Power and force and strength of a man.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is, when you think about it that way, it's like, oh yeah, I'm a stronger person now that I have these virtues to rely on. So, excellent.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay, so when we get back, I think we're going to just jump right into the topic, because there's a lot of things that we'd like to discuss. So we're going to nix the gear today and jump straight into the topic. We're here with Mr. David Dean, Superintendent of Catholic Schools for the Diocese of Tulsa, Eastern Oklahoma, and a lot of other awesome titles. We'll be right back. This segment of the Catholic Man Show is brought to you by the Catholic woodworker. Jonathan Conrad focuses on equipping families for battle in the modern world.
We're very excited that the Catholic Woodworker sponsors our show. Everything that they put out is top-notch. It's heirloom quality. It's handmade. Whether it's home altars, crucifixes, or rosaries, they're actually now the producer of the official rosary of the Catholic Man Show. So go check it out.
Yeah, if you use TCMS for the Catholic Man Show as a promo code, you get 10% off all of your purchases. Let's him know that we sent you. He'll continue supporting the show. Go support Jonathan at thecatholicwoodworker.com.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles here with Adam Minahan. We are joined by the one and only David Dean.
Good to be here.
Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you for inviting
me. So, one of your claims to fame is that you were associated with the great John Sr.
Yes.
We mentioned that you are his godson.
Correct. Yes, I attended the humanities program at Kansas.
Uh-huh.
And I enrolled in the Oral Latin, as he called it, as a freshman. And so the program itself was 2 years. I took 4 years of Latin under Dr. Senior. And then when I graduated, I went and taught, met someone from your family there, as we referenced earlier.
Yeah.
Coached your mother-in-law.
But you also helped teach some of the Latin classes, right?
Yes. So after my 2 years of teaching in Hutchison, Dr. Senior actually called me one day and said, David, would you like to come back and teach Latin under me or with me and work on your master's? And of course, I said yes. Mm-hmm. And I went back up, and I did that for four more years, actually, until he got very sick and I had to retire. But it was very nervous the first year.
I bet.
I obviously thought, kind of idolized him, right? It was right. My senior year that I actually converted, and he was my godfather, as you mentioned. And so I'll never forget that first month or so, actually going into the classroom and teaching with him. It's like, I don't belong here. I'm not up for that. You know, I can't do this. You know, I'm next to this great man, this great teacher, this great Catholic, and I'm like, what am I doing here? So it's kind of nerve-wracking at first, but he's very kind and a gentleman, and so he worked with me, even missed all my mistakes and so forth, and then eventually I went on and taught another class, because what he really needed was help. He had enough students that wanted to take his classes that after that first semester, I did kind of the second semester Latin course, and then he could go on and teach upper levels of Latin. And then the following year, we kind of repeated that process where I would maybe even go on to teach a second year after a year or so of mm-hmm. Latin. And, you know, the fun thing was about all that was that because the students in the humanities program, we all knew each other. And so typically in a Latin class like that, if they took a first semester, they'd take a second semester.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the ones that hung in then would take third and fourth semester. Mm-hmm. And so by the end of that 2 years or so, we were really good friends. And then, of course, they could go on and take third and fourth year like I did when I was an undergraduate. But then by that time, usually they'd go on to Dr. Senior. And, of course, sometimes you'd have to take a class from another professor just if you're going to go that far with it and actually get a major in it. You had to take some other Latin, you know, yeah. besides that. But, no, it was a great experience. He's such was a great teacher. Obviously, his reputation is... It continues after his passing. So
a lot of people who may not know Dr. Senior, I kind of read his books, you know, kind of mm-hmm. romanticize the idea of like even being able to hang out with him and pick his brain. But mm-hmm. for those who aren't familiar with him, why was he so different as a teacher? What was his style that caused him to be so successful or efficient mm-hmm. with how he ran his courses?
Well, there were two different kinds of courses. So in the humanities program, you had the three professors, you know, mm-hmm. Dr. Quinn, Dr. Nellick, and Dr. Senior. And they're all very different personalities or temperaments. That if you study the classical temperaments, Dr. Senior was very melancholy. And so he was kind of the quieter one of the three. And he would sit there and they'd read a passage, say, from the opening of the Iliad or the Aeneid or something. And then they'd all begin to comment on it, literally have a conversation. So it wasn't a lecture. And I never forget, the first thing I was so impressed with was that they never had notes in front of them. So they would read this passage, and then they would have this conversation for an hour and a half. So, but to Dr. Senior specifically, he had this way of, as they would play off of one another during this conversation, of we always used to say he would kind of soar. He would just sort of take off with this discussion. Maybe it was about... let's say it's the Odyssey and you're going home, you know, what's the importance of home and being at home and, you know, even being a good father and all these good things and being virtuous. And so he would just start talking and he would just very calmly and he would just sort of go and just kind of say, like on wings, probably the Holy Spirit at work there. And I think that the most phenomenal thing about him was his humility. So he was brilliant. I mean, he knew Latin, he knew the classics, you know, the literature. And yet, if you met him on the street, you would never know it. And even as a student, you would have to go and kind of run him down, which eventually a lot of kids did, right? They just wanted to hear him speak and speak and speak forever. I'm sure it was kind of a cross for him almost in a way. In the sense that he loved teaching. He was a real teacher. But I'm sure he never had a spare moment. Like myself and a lot of other students, we would line up at his office door just to talk to him mm-hmm. For all the obvious reason. We'd walk with him from the classroom back to his office, or if we saw him somewhere, we'd strike up a conversation. And we do that with all three of the professors. But so he would always talk to you a little bit, but oftentimes he had places to go or meetings and so forth. So his humility, I think, just struck is what really first kind of caught my imagination is here is this brilliant man who knows so much about so many things and probably most importantly can teach it. So when I was at KU, I was still 17 and I was not at the top of the, you know, the IQ chart. And so for him and the other two professors, certainly, to bring these great ideas down to a level where I was. Mm-hmm. And of course, this was not too long after the, you know, the great hippie time of the 60s. It was actually the 70s. And so at KU at that time, it was a lot of long hair and, you know, drug, sex, rock and roll and so forth. So we were immersed in a culture that was certainly antagonistic to what the professors were trying to do. And so the other thing, I said there's two parts of this. One was the humanities program. The other was the Latin. So I ended up taking this Latin course, and it's all oral. I mean, you walk in, there's no textbook. It's like what I'm trying to do right now with the with the adults.
Yeah.
And it was strange at first. You're in college. So first of all, I'm not taking notes. Second of all, there's no book. And of course, there's a temptation as a 17-year-old to say, oh, I can blow this class off. You know,
right.
Who's going to know?
Sure.
But obviously, I didn't. It was, or not very often. The had a few late nights there.
Sure.
But so we go in both those cases, the humanities program and the Latin course, you had to listen. But the beautiful thing about the Latin course was then, because Dr. Senior would ask you questions like, you know, quid est, and he'd point to something in the room, or quid est nomen tuum, you know, what is your name? You say nomen meum David, and so forth. And then as you went on through the courses, they would get more, the questions get more complicated and longer answers. And so you really had to listen. And it wasn't until, of course, years later, a couple of years later, that I began to realize why they did this.
Mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm.
Dr. Senior specifically with the Latin. Because it's in your memory, it's not in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I never forget once as a graduate student, we were teaching, and the other professors in the class department, many who, I mean, we're good people, I don't mean to put them down here, but they taught the textbook method. They use Wheelock or some of those texts. If some of you out there studied Latin, you probably remember Wheelock or a couple of the other, Henley and some of the others. And so we got into this argument one day that if we took one of the students from Dr. Senior's Latin class, given the way we had learned it, and a student from one of these other sections, and we had to sit down and translate a text, but without a dictionary.
Mm-hmm. Who could do better?
Who would do better?
Mm-hmm.
The other professors never took us up on the challenge, but I think I can honestly say, again, in a spirit of humility, that I really believe that a student going through Dr. Senior's class would have done better in, with that translation without the aid of a dictionary or something like that. So, again, just pointing out where is the learning, right? I mean, where is the language? And it's, you know, it's not just in your mind. You know, he'd walk around the room and he'd point things, and we had to be kind of on our toes, so to speak.
Sure.
And so what you've been to, it's part of you. It's your body. It's your, you know, you point your hands. I'll tell you a great little story one time. You probably couldn't do this today. You get arrested. But I'll never forget in one of the classes, he had one of the kids take their shoe and their sock off and put their foot up on the desk. And he did, you know, the three little piggy. This little piggy went to market. This little piggy went home. It's like, wee, 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 all the way home. All this stuff, you know, on the student's toes. And so I bring that up because it was very tactile, right? It was, and he'd say, now y'all need to go home and do this, you know, or find someone, you know, your roommate. And he'd always say these kind of crazy things. And we were like, what? Can't do that. But my point here is more the pedagogical one, is that language is just a part of us. It's just not, you know, in the memory. And by the way, language comes to Latin word lingua, which is your tongue.
Mm-hmm.
So it really is.
What tongue do you, like how many tongues do you speak?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate that because there's a lot of people who don't know about the humanities course and...
And there's a lot of people who do.
There's a lot of people who do.
And would love to hear this story.
I'm sure, like, a lot of your stories that, you know, you have to tell.
Well, I was blessed just to coming along at the right time.
And we've got Clear Creek. We've got several bishops, yes. You know, that are all as a result of the Great Humanities program. So anyway, I do want to actually ask you about sports. Do you have one other thing you wanted to say?
No, I was just going to say, too, I think another thing the program did was there were a number of students who didn't end up converting to the church, but they became much more serious about their own faith.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, I lost touch with them. Maybe they eventually came into the church. But
yeah. Well, and that's why they kind of shut it down, right? Because it was a public school.
Oh, that's right.
And
that's
like, they were converting too many people to
Catholic. Indoctrinating.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so when we get back, we're gonna jump into the topic of virtue and sports and how to keep that ordered within the household. We're here with David Dean and Adam and Hannah. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. We're here talking with David Dean. If you are listening on the radio right now or the podcast and you don't typically listen on via YouTube Live or Facebook Live, I highly suggest going back and listening, because in between breaks we had a great conversation with David Dean on more about John Sr., some stories about his lovely wife and how they met. So it's a bonus if you want to go check that out on YouTube or Facebook Live. But we're here today to talk about sports, talk about the virtue within sports, how to keep it ordered, how to keep it in its right place within the family. You gave a talk, like we mentioned, at the Parish of Christ the King recently, and you started out talking about how sports has been around for a very, very long time, and how it actually has been tied to religion, which I didn't realize, because I'd heard before that there was an argument that had been made that sports really didn't come into priority or come into the mainstream until the Industrial Revolution came, when people
no longer had
there need to be competition or things like that. But
I think there was a noticeable rise in like organized sports, especially,
maybe that's what it was. Organized
whereas
sports.
Up until then, it was more like
Olympics
I think it's interesting, because the early Olympics were certainly somewhat organized. I mean, these athletes train, for the wrestling, the running, the javelin throwing, or all the different sports they had. And they really train, because, there were honors, obviously, for the winner. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of literature that's extant that explains, the sort of the glories of being the victorious athlete in ancient Greece or even like on Ippon.
Trying to outrun the lion. And
yes, which is always a good thing.
Actually, you don't have to outrun it. You just have to outrun the person next to you.
That's correct.
Right?
That's right, like the bear in the forest. Right.
Right.
Yeah. So just be faster than your neighbor. That doesn't sound like the first commandment, though, does it?
You're either going to run faster or you won't.
Yeah.
Or not for long.
Right, yeah.
But it is interesting that sports has such a great history, and it is tied to religion. A lot of the events were done around religious events. I think one of the stories I told the other night at this talk was that in the Iliad, that Achilles' best friend Patroclus is killed, by Hector. And so one of the things they do is they have these funeral games. Mm-hmm. So there was certainly a religious element to it, because those games were directed toward or invoke the different gods and goddesses at the time. But there were all these great games, like javelin throwing and running again and wrestling, and I think even some games with swords and so forth that they played. I believe there were nine different events that took place as part of the funeral games. So in honor of Patroclus, who, had been killed. So we have that, and all through antiquity, there's so many examples of athletics, sports being a very important part of the culture. And, of course, the Olympics are the most famous example, I guess. You can go to Olympia today in Greece, and you can go right down on the field as it is, a track, so to speak, around it, and what's left of a few stone bleachers. But it's I've actually been there, and it's we went with the humanities program, actually.
Oh, cool.
We took a trip to Greece, a bunch of us, and it's like going to Delphi or, you know, the Parthenon in Athens. You walk into this place, and you realize that people have been there, you know, 2,500 years ago or
right.
more.
And, yeah.
And you just, with the right mind, you just take it in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just walk around and imagine. And of course, it helps if you've read some of the Greek literature and so
right.
forth. And you just take it in and you imagine, you know, the races going on there and just all the events of antiquity and all these people on the Oracle at Delphi. And you start thinking about Socrates and all these great things. So yeah, there's a great history there, and it's I had to condense it the other night because there is so much. Even the Egyptians were believed to have games and so forth, even possibly before the Greeks.
I mean, it only makes sense to me where if you have men mm-hmm. with any spare time at all,
yes,
they're going to be like, oh yeah, well,
I can beat you at this,
right? I'll bet I'm better at this than you.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
no, that's right. That's right. And another thing I mentioned too is that it's very tied into the martial arts, and by that I don't just mean like karate and those things we do today, but in a more generic sense of war. I mean, think about the Spartans.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Now I think they went maybe a little to the extreme there. When you were 5 or 6 year old boy, you left your family and went and trained. And of course, obviously, a lot of that's it's just pure athleticism. But that at some point it's learning how to handle a sword, right, and how to actually engage in a battle, and I'm sure some of the strategy and so forth mm-hmm. that goes with that. So there's a great history there too, and think of the training of the Roman legions. I'm sure they had lots of training, and the sort of dark side of it would be the gladiators in the Colosseum and so forth that we know quite a bit about
mm-hmm.
and the training, the way they trained, to be great gladiators. For obviously, many of them were slaves, and so that was their path to freedom. If they could train sufficiently and maybe fight their way out of slavery.
Mm-hmm.
It's an incredible history. But I do think you had a point earlier that obviously today it's more organized and in some sense, and we start, and it, of course, it's changed. I think the end of these things, of sports particularly, has mutated in a manner.
Right, they've become something in and of themselves instead of an act of leisure, you know.
Correct.
Which
correct.
I think that's traditionally, mm-hmm. you know, like, oh, hey, the after mass, you know,
mm-hmm.
there's people are playing baseball, or people are, you know, like, mm-hmm. why? Just because it's fun.
It's
you
fun.
Know, it's...
That's right.
It's just good to do. But now it's like, no, the sport is the thing. It's like not about fun.
No,
you know?
It's
or
not.
Community.
It's about the sport.
Yeah, I made a distinction the other night during this talk is that I asked him, I said, would you rather be an amateur or a professional? And we could apply this to a lot of things in life. But
well, I'd want to be a professional for about 5 years, mm-hmm. and then I'm going to retire.
I just want the
super
paycheck.
Rich yeah. with like all kinds of endorsement deals, and I'll be an amateur for the rest of my life.
I think that deserves a gong. amateur, if you know some Latin, the AMAT is he, she, or it, you know, third person singular loves. And so it has to do with an amateur loves the sport. So the point you were making earlier, before you went off the road there, David, with young people, because I was talking to parents whose children were in a K-8 school, we should be teaching these kids to love a sport.
Right.
The one I'm most familiar with is basketball, so I use that as my example most of the time. But really learn the sport, learn to love it, how to do it correctly. Again, training, discipline, mm-hmm. right? Discipline, the discipline of the sport. So do you learn to pass correctly, dribble and shoot and so forth? And there are ways to do that correctly that will make you a better shooter, passer, dribbler and so on, a rebounder. And to learn those things, and so there's a discipline there. And again, that's where Latin comes in.
Disciple.
Disciple, it literally means to learn.
Mm-hmm.
So when you, and sometimes we use that for expression, learn a discipline. It's kind of it's kind of redundant. So you're learning to learn.
Yeah. But, do have to learn to learn, though.
That's correct. Yeah. And so, and one of the best words is disciple, right? I mean, it's someone who's learning. So with the young kids, we should be focusing on that, not winning. I thought it was terrible. There was a football game in California just last week. The team won 106-0.
Wow.
Now, there's something disordered there.
Right? Yeah.
I realize varsity sports, and I would agree that varsity sports is going to be more competitive. I understand that, and that's a high school. But leading, I still think that's wrong, that type of score. Coach mm-hmm. should have pulled back or, you know, put somebody else in or done something. Yeah. But for younger kids, back to the audience that I was addressing, is to teach them to love that sport. And then I tried to make the further analogy to school. Even if English is not your favorite subject, as a student, you need to respect the fact that it's a discipline that's worth learning for itself, mm-hmm. not for what it's going to get you. Now, an English degree is not going to get you much nowadays, but you know what I mean. Maybe science is a better example, right?
Yeah.
You should learn the principles and truths of science for what they are, because there's a goodness and a beauty there. In those principles, and that's mm-hmm. what we should be teaching our children, mm-hmm. not some distant goal that's probably, at least in sports, unrealistic.
Right, and that's mm-hmm. that's when it gets ridiculous, right? When you take it to that extreme where you're trying to teach little Johnny, who's 8 years old, mm-hmm. so that way he can get a D1 scholarship, and so you have him in traveling teams, and then you have him taking personal lessons, and then you have him, you know, scouting over here with another team, so that way maybe he can get right. more exposure.
And on every break, you're entering into a tournament, you know,
right?
You know, like, so
right.
there's no such thing as fall break or spring break, or I mean, it's like,
or summer break
or Christmas break. I mean, yeah, like, I mean, there's, you're traveling,
and it really does disrupt the family,
right?
It's yeah. obviously usually what happens. One parent goes with that child. The other parent stays home with the other children, so you're separated for days at a time, and you're living in a motel room and eating junk food and that whole scene. And it's right. just there's nothing very familial about it. You might have some good time as a father with your son. Mm-hmm. Let's say they're playing basketball or tennis. That might be beneficial in a little way, but the rest of the family's not there.
Yeah, right. And especially if that's the modus operandi.
Yeah,
that's just not going to cultivate a good. It's not going to bring good culture into your family.
No, it's not. It's not. And the father's gone.
Right. We'll be right back. We're going to continue this on the other side of the break. This is David Niles with Adam Minahan and David Dean talking about virtue in sports. We'll be back.
Do you feel like God is calling you to go on a pilgrimage? Well, for the last 34 years, Select International Tours has been leading pilgrimages to holy sites all over the world.
And when you go on pilgrimages, Dave, you want to make sure you have the best hotels, you're touring with the best guides, and every detail has been addressed.
And that's exactly what you're getting with Select International Tours. So, for more information, go to their brand new website, selectinternationaltours.com. They have been a sponsor of the Catholic Man Show for a long time now. Even during the COVID pandemic, they were still sponsoring our show. A lot of other tour companies were really shutting down. These guys were consistent. So go to selectinternationaltours.com to find out more information about all the great pilgrimages they offer all over the world.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles. Here with Adam Minahan, David Dean is our special guest. And we're excited. Like, Tulsa's just got it going on.
We've said, like, Tulsa's the place. Eastern Oklahoma is the place for Catholic culture. Like, we are really changing things here in Eastern Oklahoma.
Yeah, I mean, the Archdiocese?
Not we, as in, like,
I'm not so sure.
But I'm just saying, like,
those guys in the, you
well,
know, the Archdiocese.
I just don't pay attention to what's going on over there.
I wouldn't go there.
I just know that there are a lot of great things happening in Eastern Oklahoma, for sure.
This show airs That's all right. throughout the state of Oklahoma, and so I just want to like say that I am kidding. I'm making a joke about the Archdiocese is great.
I hope you have your bazooka ready.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, they're very kind.
I cannot disclose
whether or not you do or not.
Cannot confirm or deny the validity of that. But so we're talking about sports.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously,
you know, it does not need to even be said that there's a lot of great things that that a child can learn from playing sports, physically, just for his own virtue, right? I mean, obviously. So what do you, but what would you say, because I think there's also an attitude that if you don't put your kid in sports, it's almost like child abuse, you know, that as if playing sports is the only way to learn these certain things. And I don't think that attitude is quite, you know, that's not it either. What would you say? What do you think about that?
I think what parents should do out there is, and I've heard other parents do this, and it seems to work very well, is when your children are younger, usually if you live in a town of any size, there's several leagues. You know, one might be YMCA or one might be a church, different churches' leagues. Some might be more specifically organized for sports. But, you know, check them out. Find out what they're about. I mean, do they have the proper attitude toward, let's say it's a second, third grade, you know, what is that? Probably 8, 9, 10-year-old. Do they have the proper attitude that an 8 to 10-year-old that you would want for your son in a football, soccer, or basketball team, whatever it is, where they're going to be learning the basics? They're going to learn some things about character, and so much of that is the coach. And I mentioned this the other night in my talk. The profound influence of the coach. How do they act? You know, and specifically today, especially, what's their language like? You know, and I'm even talking about tone of voice. I mean, I've seen grown men just berate kids who are not their own son. And I don't mean to sound soft here, but after all, this is third grade soccer. This isn't World War II.
When you step back a little bit.
Right. It's not the Super Bowl. I mean, come on. This is third grade soccer. So what is their sort of philosophy or how they run the league and what's important to them? And I think as a parent, you have an obligation to pursue that.
Yeah.
And so I think that helps a lot, because I think you'll see everything out there. You know, we always read the news about the parent that gets thrown out of the baseball game because he went after the umpire with a baseball bat or the other coach or something.
There are a few things more embarrassing than
that,
you know?
Yeah. You know, you'd think that would be one of the good things about social media, right? That, you know, everybody has their phone on.
Right.
And they would be filming you as you're chasing the umpire around the field, but it hasn't seemed to work so far.
There are just some parents who cannot not speak up. You know, it's like...
And see, I think this is a real danger for the parent now, because it's not just that you're setting a bad example for your son. It's that you're acting like a complete idiot.
Yeah.
You know, in these situations. And so you have a whole crowd of people. And so what's going on inside of you, fathers, is what we all need to ask ourselves as fathers. What's going on inside of us that we get to this point that we're so offended? Because I would argue that's actually then at that point, because anger makes us irrational.
Yeah.
And then that sort of behavior really makes us look weak. We think in that moment of anger we're being strong and, you know, we're pursuing some distorted version of justice or something because the umpire called the third strike on my son. But that's way wide of the mark. I mean, it might have been a bad call, but again, so what?
Yeah.
Life doesn't always go the way we want, does it?
No.
Right. So I used to, it's actually good for them to even catch the bad breaks.
That's right.
To be able to learn and adapt move forward.
Absolutely. Yeah. Most of the greatest discoveries and movements forward in history have been through mistakes.
Right.
We all learn from mistakes. And in fact, most people probably learn the best from mistakes.
Right.
So let them stumble a little bit. It's okay.
So I used to coach my little sister's team. I helped my dad coach in basketball for, I don't know, 5 years. And so a handful of times I saw an adult get kicked out of the game by the referee, you know, and it's like there's just like nothing more embarrassing, especially for the kid of that parent, you know, like dad's getting kicked out of the game again, you know, like it's just terrible. Like
don't be that guy.
Yeah, don't be that guy.
You know, I'm really glad you brought that up, David, because you know, before I was superintendent, for a lot of years, decades, I've been a headmaster or principal of some schools. And by the way, they've all been either Catholic or Christian schools. So that makes the story even more deplorable. I can't tell you how many fathers I've had to walk out of basketball gyms, particularly because you have a closed environment, right on like a football field or soccer field. I've had the official look at me because I would go to them before the game and say, look, I'm here, I'm in charge. And if you have any trouble, let me know. And I can't tell you how often he'd look for me and he'd point at me and tell him to come over. He'd say, that man over there on the third row in the blue sport coat, he's gone or your team forfeits. And so I have to go over and get him, escort him out of the gym. And there's just a stillness that falls over the gym. And fortunately, I've never been escorted out as a father, but I've escorted a lot of fathers out. And I felt kind of embarrassed. I mean, for him.
Right.
That I'm having to walk this grown man out of a gym, and the whole crowd's just stopped. Right, the team's going back to their benches. The refs are at the table there, talking to the scorekeepers and all that. And I'm walking this gentleman out the door, and he's finished. You know, for that game.
Yeah.
So now he can't even watch his son play. Mm-hmm. And I can only imagine what his son is thinking at that point. Mm-hmm. I never. Course went and talked to any of those sons, but I can't imagine it was good.
Right.
Yeah.
So David, here's like the crux for me when it comes to sports and like family life. Like there are a few things, like as a father, I'm not willing to give up. Right. I don't want to give up the majority of the time having family dinner together. Family dinner is very important for a thriving family to develop traditions. Right.
Everything comes together at the table.
At the table. Another thing is like making sure that Sunday is a holy day. You know, making sure that we enjoy it for its leisure. Mm-hmm. In sports today, it attacks both of those things, right? So if I have my sons in soccer or football or basketball, it doesn't matter whatever sport you want to mention. They have practices in the evenings, and then they have games on the weekends. Sometimes they have games on Sundays. It's hard for me to justify one. I set the rule, like we're not having games on Sundays. However, it's almost like unfair at times to my son. Who has worked all week long and been disciplined and showed fortitude and pushed himself and showed grown together as a team and shown like that he has to be part of the team. It's not about him. And then say, sorry, son, you can't play on Sundays. Right. You have to let your team down.
Yeah. And it's also not fair to the other team. It's not to fair the team members, right?
And so this is where I really struggle when it comes to sports and family life and how to juggle this, because very few times now is it just a recreational sport. Like it's not really the YMCA anymore. It's like you have to go on a traveling team, or you have to dip your foot into the swimming pool. It's actually you're all in. You're jumping completely in. You don't get to like just test it out for a little bit. And so this is really hard for as a dad, because you want your son. Mm-hmm. There are great things like we've mentioned that sports, you know, help build up your son or daughter. Right. You know, they're good things, but at what cost?
Exactly. And it's very difficult today. And I think back to my previous point is that's something you can ask when you're checking out some of these leagues and teams is, do you play on Sunday? Do you practice on Sunday? So Catholic fathers out there, you really need to exercise your virtue because as the head of the family, this is where you need to step in and try to help make these decisions for your family. A lot of these leagues will play on Sunday or practice, and there may come a point at which you just say, no, that's not going to happen, especially if it's Sunday morning. We're going to go to Mass, and as a family, we're going to come home, we're going to have lunch and so forth. And, you know, my son, Samuel, won't be there. So, tell the coach, and then you really just have to have a talk with your son. You know, back to the whole idea of discipline, as it said, means to learn. So explain to your son why this is important. Like, what is our end, or tell us, you know, in terms of life? And there's good natural things like sports and activities like that. But ultimately, there's the supernatural.
Mm-hmm. And as you know, natural is hopefully leading you to the supernatural.
Yes. And when it leads you away from and distorts that, then you, fathers, particularly need to step in and say, no, that's not going to happen in this family.
Yeah.
And it's difficult. Obviously, your son will probably most likely be disappointed. He may face some ridicule. You might, as a father, face ridicule from other fathers.
You definitely. It's not that you might. Mm-hmm. You definitely will.
That's right. Yeah.
You just need to be like mentally prepared for that, mm-hmm. because you'll be the weird guy, right?
That's right.
And then you'll be also the guy who's like, oh, you don't really care about this. Mm-hmm. Like, unfortunately, if you're listening on the radio, we're out of time. I highly suggest you go to thecatholicmanshow.com. You can listen to this full episode because I'd like to continue talking about this and a few more things.
Yeah.
with David Dean. We're on the Lord's team,
the winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers to Jesus.
Cheers. I mean, because this is the problem. When you make this stand, and you're the only one making this stand, and dads are...
Well, you're not, but you might be at that practice. You know, like...
Your team, you're definitely going to be the only
guy.
But
the thing is, the other people who have made that stand, they're not there anymore. You know?
Right.
You're not the only one, but you're the only one at the time.
Let me tell you,
it feels right at that moment.
Very lonely. You know,
right.
You feel very exposed. Because... no one else is thinking this way, and I'm not. Let's caveat this in saying, like, if that's what you do with your family, this isn't a judgment here. I'm trying to work through this myself as a dad of young children.
Because honestly, there's nothing about having a sport on a Sunday that seems inconsistent with honoring and like keeping holy the Sabbath, because. Let's say you and the neighbors decide to
pick up a football game.
Play. I mean, that is actually exactly mm-hmm. what like a holy Sunday looks like.
Yes.
You know? So there is a difference when it's an obligation, and now it becomes a form. It's like it becomes a form of work, you mm-hmm. know, that like, oh, I'm not free on my Sunday to like celebrate the way I want. But if you're in a good league on a good team, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. There's nothing like fundamentally inconsistent mm-hmm. with playing a game
right.
on Sunday.
Exactly.
But it's, well, like I said, when it's an obligation now and it's.
That changes
you know,
the game.
And it's not like, yeah, it changes the game. Exactly. Because the pickup game with your neighbor happens at a spontaneous moment mm-hmm. when it works for the family, you know, like you're not having to interrupt. Family life, you know, mm-hmm. so there's a difference, but anyway.
Well, exactly, and it's again, it goes back to that amateur notion, right, that I think that has kind of a derogatory notion in our modern culture to be an amateur. Is almost like, what?
Right.
But actually, it's a great thing. I would argue it's, I did this once with another group. I said, would you rather be a professional or an amateur? And I wasn't just talking about sports, but I said almost anything. And don't we, as men, if someone asks us, why do you love your wife? Are you going to say some practical, pragmatic reason of what she does for me?
I love her professionally.
Yes. or is this because I love her for who she is?
She's very proficient as a woman. And
yes,
you know,
very efficient. Yeah. So, I mean, and of course, imagine then how your wife would feel.
Yeah.
If right. she would hear your response. And I think you just translate that over to your children. So your example, so you're at the park or something, and a pickup game comes up. To me, that's perfectly natural. It's normal. You're doing it because you like it,
mm-hmm.
and love it, and you're with your family, and you're doing this, and it's healthy,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, so many things in our society, they're not sitting in front of a screen
mm-hmm.
looking at
yeah.
Lord knows what, and they're having a good time, you know, with you as the father and maybe other kids, and who knows, you might even meet some other good families through that process. And it's just so much more healthy. Again, back to what we were talking about earlier, you're not 2 hours away at some tournament.
In a hotel room that night.
Yeah, a hotel room that night, and getting up having a Egg McMuffin for breakfast and, you know, going off to the next game.
Right.
And I know we've all done that a little bit, but I think we really need as Catholic fathers to step back and say, what's important here? Because I can tell you, our children are all grown, and I know it sounds so common and mundane, but your children do grow up fast. And so all you young fathers out there, that 18 years or so, it's going to just go by in a flash.
Right. How old is Luke?
He's 8.
Right. So on his next birthday, half of his life at home
will be over. That's right.
Yeah.
And that's your time with him.
Right.
Because there's the other side of this, right? The other side of the coin is that when they turn 18, even if they go to trade school or college, where that is, they're probably leaving home in most cases, not always. But
he will, yes.
So your influence will diminish a little bit.
He will.
He will. Yes.
So, this is your moment.
Right.
You know, and enjoy it and have that time and with your son, because it will go quickly and it will be over soon. And they will go off, as men should, young men should, and you know, kind of chart their path in life. But it's a shame that our culture has become so jaded. I know some of you dads probably have kids in high school sports, and one of the big trends right now are these select leagues, the AAU teams. And the last school I was a headmaster, the AAU team came out and said, this was for girls soccer. They said to the girls, if you're going to play on our AAU team, you can't even play on the high school team. I mean, so it just gets worse and worse, right? I mean,
why?
It's terrible that you don't have enough time
to do both.
Yeah.
Is the AAU team supposed to be, like, give you a better opportunity than playing on the high school team?
Well, for the college scholarship. Right, for the college scholarship. So that's what they'll say. And it is true, maybe not in football, but some other sports. These college coaches, as they go to AAU team, I can actually give you an example. Our middle son Sam was a very good basketball player, and we made the mistake, I think, of putting him on a select team, as they called him at the time. And they were quite good. We lived in Texas at the time, and it was very competitive. And I think we went to Houston one time for this tournament. And there's all select AAU-type teams. And there's up in the stands, guess who's there? Roy Williams, Mike Krzyzewski, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, and Bill Self. Just all these top-tier coaches.
Now, you were excited to see Bill Self.
Of course.
Right.
I wouldn't have said Rock Chalk Jayhawk.
Right.
But the rest of them, I didn't know.
Yeah.
Well, and Roy a little bit. He was a former KU coach. But I'm just explaining the phenomenon right now. So if you want your son to go to that level, the high school experience is not important. And so I'm trying to tie all this in back to the family. So now is it hurting the family? But now kids in schools are having to sort of leave their school sports. Their school team in sport to go to this next level to get to the final level.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I really, my point is to all you out there is that this is very disordered system we have. And again, you as the father are the one that needs to step in and pull this back in, you know, to the home and do what fathers, you know, be paternal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because your kids only get one childhood.
That's correct.
You know, you can try to like make up for things later, but it's never going to be the same. Right. And so if you don't, the family life, that's the most important.
Yes, absolutely.
You have to just make sure that you're having your priorities and that you know what they are, you know, that there is a hierarchy and it's not subjective. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you might say, oh, well, I value these things above other things. Some values within a family can be subjective to certain degrees, but there is objectively your family life is more important than a sports career, you know, or any career actually, you know, because your children can be successful in many things. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many opportunities for a young child. So whether they play college sports or not, that is not going to be, I mean, because we have to remember, we're trying to get our kids to heaven.
Correct.
Not into the NFL.
Correct.
If they get into the NFL, you get to retire early, which is a perk.
That's great. Like if your kids can become Philip Rivers, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like that's ideal. Yeah. Okay. Yes, we're talking best case scenario right there.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously we want to strive for best case scenarios, but we have to be realistic and we cannot compromise. You're not going to make a Philip Rivers by compromising your family life. You know, That's not how you create an NFL quarterback who insists that a priest travel with the team so that he can go to daily mass. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. That's how you get a lot of maybe other quarterbacks, but not mm-hmm. one like that who prides and insists upon the practice of his faith. You know,
yeah. And what a great example of fortitude. We were talking about that earlier.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine the fortitude that took.
Right.
For Philip Rivers to do that.
Yeah.
To step out and say that. Talk about being lonely or exposed, you know, like in that aspect.
What would be fascinating is to find out if there were other players on the team that all of a sudden jumped in and said, Philip, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I love it. I didn't.
You know, it's actually an opportunity.
But I love it.
Yeah. It's actually an opportunity. There's going to be a lot of guys. Yeah. You know, if you make that stand on the team, mm-hmm. a lot of other dads be like, you know what? That's not something I've really thought about before.
Persecution is always an opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but
absolutely.
But that rings true, and I'm gonna follow suit.
Yeah, no, that's right. That's right. And I think it. You know, we're talking about virtues tonight, and of course, fortitude is one of the cardinal virtues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and you know, prudence is the other one. You know, say Thomas,
the mother of the cardinal
the mother.
Virtues.
Yeah, the mother. Even I think one time he uses the reference to. Charioteer, you know, of mm-hmm. the other virtues. And this is where, again, to our topic, fathers have to be prudent. And prudence does not mean what modernity thinks as you sit back and, oh, you kind of wait and check out which way it's going, the wind's blowing, you know, and okay, well, I guess it's the safe route. That's not prudence at all.
No, like, well,
it's decisive action at the right moment.
And they would say, oh, prudence is like holding your kid back mm-hmm. maybe once or twice. So that they are older
and more dominant.
Yeah, when they as a freshman, mm-hmm. you know, I mean that's it's a prudent thing to do. It's like,
oh no,
well, I don't think you know what prudence is. Mm-hmm. You know, like,
exactly.
So I do have a very practical question. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of Catholic families listening with bigger families, mm-hmm. so. Something comes to play in sports and family dynamics is when you have, you know, 4 to 6 kids and everybody wants to do a different sport. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes you can get all the boys doing similar sport, but to what degree do you compromise, you know, somebody excelling in what they're good at or in what they actually want to do versus like, okay, if we're going to have a sport, everybody's going to do the same thing because we're not going to go to 4 or 5 different classes, mm-hmm. right? So, but you see how out of touch I am with sports that I call it classes instead of
classes.
Practice.
Yes.
Yes.
It's a good learning environment. Yeah. That's where you're going with that.
Yes. Yeah.
So, yeah, what's the balance there to where you show
that's a good question.
Every kid, you know, has an important place in the family, but at the same time, you got to compromise to where you're not breaking over your calendar for all these different things.
Right, because you got 9 kids and all of them play sport.
You become a glorified taxi driver, no, and not a parent.
Right. I mean, that's right. You're having to like hire people to take your kids around and stuff.
Right. No, that's a very good question. I think one of the things you do is you say, we'll try to pick your favorite sport. And that's it. No, we're not going to do 3 sports or 4 sports a year, which some families do. Now, that's easier for the 2-child family.
Yeah. I mean, they have literally nothing to do. So, I know that they think that they're busy, and
the
2-child families. They're like, "What? No, we're so busy." He's like, "Yeah, I know. I thought that too when I had 2 kids." Yeah.
No,
it's much more difficult. Obviously, the more children you have, but I think you try to look at your children. I know with our we just had 4. We wanted to have more, but we had 4, and mm-hmm. so I felt blessed with the 4. Obviously, we have and. As they grow up, we can kind of see a couple of our kids were a little more athletic than the others.
Yeah.
And we let them all have, you know, opportunities at different times. But one or two in particular seem to be a little more, you know, geared that way. And so we tried to maybe did a little bit more with them. As I said, one of them earlier went on with the basketball and so forth. And we had another one go on pretty far with tennis. But again, I think you just have to, Juan Pablo, you have to do the best you can, you know, given your situation. If you have 9 kids, you're going to have to make some decisions. And I think one of the first ones is just, okay, if you get 1 sport, this is what we're going to try and we'll see how you do. And maybe you'll find out some of the kids won't like it. And soccer is always, I think, always kind of the beginning sport and a very good one.
Yeah, soccer is a good sport.
The gross motor skills that for young children, I think, are really good.
I'll tell you, when I was coaching basketball, I could, it was so obvious, mm-hmm. the girls who had played soccer, because mm-hmm. they knew how to move their feet. You know, like, just that they had basic footwork mm-hmm. skills, mm-hmm. and it translated, and they made way better basketball players mm-hmm. just because they weren't stumbling. You know, like, they knew how to run, and they knew how yes. to move their body. Mm-hmm. It was a huge, huge advantage.
I think it's a great kind of intro sport, right?
Yeah, I do too.
When they're young, to get them playing soccer, and some will like it, some won't. Some will want to go on to other things, but it's a great way to start, and then you can kind of figure out. I think too, if you, I'm assuming here, if you have 9 or 10 children, you might have several that just aren't that interested in sports.
Yeah,
right, and so. Maybe just a little bit of exercise is good. You go walk around the park. Maybe you get into that pickup game at the park we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
But I think then what you try to do with those children is you find something else that they like to do because they don't like athletics that much or just don't feel oriented.
Just pray it's not horseback riding. Like, oh,
really?
That sounds expensive.
It's so expensive.
Mucho. Oh,
yeah.
It's a good sport, though.
I would never let my kids horseback ride.
No? Uh-oh.
You have to have a horse.
Yeah.
Like, we don't have to.
We let our kids ride. We have a couple
of horses. I mean, like, as like a competitive thing.
Oh, no. Yeah.
No. I would love for my children to ride a horse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're out in the country, you should get a horse.
I mean, but like, you have to have a trailer, and now you have to buy a truck that can pull the trailer.
That's true.
And
I like that idea, though.
Yeah, I would like to
That's
have
That's pretty
a,
macho.
I actually would like to have the truck.
Get a dually.
Yeah.
Honey? You know, Elizabeth, she, I think, could be a really good horseback rider.
Yeah.
So,
better get that.
Uh-huh. I'm going to go ahead and buy the truck.
Yeah.
Have it entered.
Get ready for it.
Just in case.
Never put her on a horse, but I can tell. I mean, yeah. I've got an eye for this kind of thing. To answer your question, I think what you do is you take, like, let's say you have 9 children. I think you take your 3 most unathletic kids and you say, look, you don't get to do sports, but I will give you $100. Here you go. And that's what you do. And then you settle it that way and be like, look, your brothers.
Dad advice with David Niles.
Your brothers, your other siblings, they're athletic. But you are going to excel in industry in other ways. And I'm starting you right now. Here's $100.
Try to make that $200.
To not bring this up again. So...
is not good advice. No.
Well, there could be things like music lessons or
yeah,
right.
Yeah,
that you could. I think point your children.
I think it'd be great to you know.
You know what? I'm glad you brought that up because that I think is a really really good point that almost all of the virtues that you people talk about and are so that you can learn in sports very well can also be learned through music. Whether it comes to like team participation, mm-hmm. it's like, well, have you ever tried to play in an orchestra? You know, or
just jam with another person,
or exactly. I mean, because that
you could be you could like really be good at the guitar, and then like another guy gets in here, like.
But
we don't sound good at all. Together,
it takes a ridiculous amount of perseverance to learn an instrument, and there's no games where you win. You know, there's no winning where there's obvious public recognition. You know, hopefully, like if you're learning like a. Music teacher is like doing concerts and mm-hmm. performances, you know, as you learn, which is kind of like that. But learning an instrument, I think, is significantly harder than learning to play a sport. Mm-hmm. And so that's another really good avenue for children because you can practice the instrument at home, you know.
Yeah, I would highly recommend if you can give your children piano lessons. And I know that.
The piano, I think, is the best instrument to learn to start off.
Absolutely, you obviously learn melody, you learn mathematics,
yeah,
you know, the quarter note, the half note, the full note, all these things, the scales.
The scale, that's what it is. Like you learn scales. It's scales. I mean, that's what a piano is. It's like music theory in an instrument.
Right, and again, it's just like the athletics. If you think about it, so let's go back to the family of 9 children. You're going to have 2 or 3 that are going to love the piano, and they may want to. Maybe go on with a guitar, which is another good instrument. And you can go find a cheap acoustic guitar.
Sure.
You know, at a guitar store or, you know, it's a Facebook marketplace. I don't recommend that too much. But
yeah.
You know how I am.
It actually is pretty good, though.
I'm a Neanderthal. Yeah. But anyway, but wherever you find it, you can find a cheap guitar and let them start to, you know, play around with it a little bit. And I think you'll find that a couple of your children want to go that direction. They wouldn't want to go with athletics.
Yeah.
And then, if you do have that, or if you or your wife can do something on the piano, some music. You sit around and sing songs. And I'm going to keep going back to the amateur thing. It's, you know, you're not some professional choir. You should mm-hmm. be sitting around singing songs from time to time, mm-hmm. you know, really good ones with your family. And if you're off key, who cares?
Right.
It doesn't matter.
Your kids definitely don't care.
No, they...
Now, especially when they're little, they don't even know.
They don't care, but just sing some good old-fashioned
songs. Anna belts songs at Holy Mass. And like, mm-hmm. There are times...
Don't you just love that? I think it's hilarious.
I do,
like,
too.
When little kids yeah. are like... All of their body yeah. is yes. like singing this song.
It's great.
Like, that's yeah. praising the Lord right there. You know?
Yes. I mean, they're off key. Who cares?
Yeah, they don't care.
They don't care.
Belting it out.
In yeah. fact, I don't know yeah. if they know, but I even if they did know, they would not care. Like,
no.
They're loving it.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They're all in.
Exactly. You know, and I know a lot of you have listeners in probably all 50 states or more, you know, other Canada yeah. or wherever. And, yeah. and one of the things we did in Kansas, so we learned Home on the Range. That was a state song. And that's a great
that's
song.
That's your state song?
I think so.
Okay.
If I remember correctly.
I say yeah. your state song. I mean, you're in yeah. Oklahoma now, but
yeah,
that's Kansas state song.
Yeah,
I did not know
I think
that.
I think it is. I may be wrong.
Oklahoma has the best state song by far.
Mm-hmm.
It's the like the one state song that almost everybody knows.
Because of the play.
Because of the play.
The musical.
Yeah.
The musical, yeah.
Oklahoma, every night.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, like,
yeah.
everybody knows the well, Oklahoma state song, and it's like, who knows? Can you think of any other? I mean, you obviously
Home
know,
on the Range is pretty good, too.
I mean, Home on the Range, but that's, I guess they adopted that as their...
Yeah, so I mean, the beautiful part about this is so your children are learning something about their state, which they should.
Yeah.
They should know something about their home. And it's right. very important that they know where they're from.
Mm-hmm.
Because in some sense, that's who they are. And then, of course, there's the advantage of learning music,
mm-hmm.
you know, the melody, the math, all the things we're talking about. And then there's that collegial, familial atmosphere. You are all hopefully just sitting in the living room kind of having fun.
Yeah.
And you're singing songs, and this is good family time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's something that they'll remember. And right. especially if you don't do it very well. You know, when they get older, they're going back, do you remember the time we sat around and, you know, in the backyard or around the in front of the fireplace and we sang these songs and you know, we're off key and whatever, and they'll make fun of one another. You know, like Johnny has a great voice and James is couldn't carry a tune in a bucket. You know, and you have fun with that, and it's just, you know, it's such a normal human thing. And
right.
I really encourage you all to do that.
I gotta tell you this story. So Elizabeth, Dave's youngest, our oldest daughter, it was her birthday, and or was it her feast day? One of the two, birthday or yeah. feast day. And the Minahans realized, oh, it's Elizabeth's birthday.
Oh, this is her feast day.
Her feast day. Yeah. It's her feast day. We need to go over there and sing a song to her, mm-hmm. you know, for her feast day. And then we realized, well, what song would be appropriate to sing?
Mm-hmm.
And so we were like trying, and the one that we all knew.
Mm-hmm.
And so like we were trying to figure it out, and like we threw out a couple options, and we realized really quick it would just be Haley and I singing, or it would just mm-hmm. be one person singing. But all of us know the Donum Nobis Pacem. So we walked over there, and I don't know, like it's not that song is not an easy song to sing if you're not a very good singer, which we're not, mm-hmm. which I'm not. Personally, and so we go over there singing "Dona Nobis Pacem Pacem," you know, and we're doing this whole song, and we are just—I mean, nails on the chalkboard.
It wasn't that bad. It was not that
wasn't
bad.
That bad.
We were pretty bad, but Elizabeth was over there like as. Smile, like oh, ear yeah. to just ear, glow. Like just
glowing,
just glowing that That's we were great. Over there singing That's to great. Her. And I realized, you know what? I don't care. This is worth it.
Yeah. She didn't care.
She definitely didn't care. So,
no.
But it was it just yeah. part of like,
no,
she's
right.
going to remember it. And I'm going to remember it just because how bad we were.
Yeah.
But she's going to remember it for a different reason.
Mm-hmm. But I will tell you, like learning to play an instrument and like having played sports,
mm-hmm.
like the things of my childhood. Both of those things are some of the most like satisfactory things that I did. Mm-hmm. Obviously, an instrument has the advantage that I still continue to do that. You know, the fact that
I can't believe I didn't get drafted this year. I thought I was going to get drafted this year.
You know what?
I thought you were in.
I thought, I mean, with my solid 40 time and my bench press,
the
I thought,
NFL, they actually called me this year.
Yeah.
And I turned them down. I was like, you know what? I don't have time.
I'm hanging up my cleats.
I told them, this is what I told them. I was like, look, I'll do it, but I'm not coming to practice.
Practice? Okay. We're talking about practice?
That's a professional attitude.
Like, yeah. I'll show up for the games, but I'm not doing practice, all right? Because I'm busy.
Yeah.
Got nothing to
eat. And, like, I don't need practice, all right?
Mm-hmm.
I've been practicing for a long time. And they said...
They didn't sign you.
Well, they didn't offer me... They said, well, we'll have to offer you less money. And I said...
I said,
don't ever call me again.
Yeah.
That's what I told him.
Fair enough.
It was Terry Bradshaw. He was like, you know, he was the one, he's just like third party deal. Oh. And I said, like, Terry, you tell those guys. And I won't tell you what I said, but that's so, what I said.
So I thought it would be a cool, good way to end this show.
What?
With
are we off the path?
Wait, are we recording?
With we're like, we're having a good time and I want to keep it going by maybe we could share the one sports story about your son, whether it's funny or epic or anything that comes to your head. Well, son or daughter.
I don't have any. I have
one son.
Mm-hmm. Well, but, yeah, but he's 1.5. He does not play any sports. He walks.
What?
Yeah. He does walk.
Yeah. You're just a bad dad.
So,
yeah. That's bad parenting. Yeah. Sorry.
I'll start and I'll give you guys time to think of your stories.
I already have mine.
Okay.
Okay. So in my story, Santiago, who is 6 now, as he will tell you all the time, was probably 2.5 or 3. And he was in a soccer league with Luke and Jude, Adam's kid. And we're having a soccer game in the YMCA. And they're just going back and forth. Everybody's just, at that time, you're just chasing the ball.
It's pack ball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just everybody. The ball is there running. So
there's like one person who knows who's faster and good on the field.
Yeah.
And they have the ball all the time. And it's like an escort service. Everybody is like escorting that person
exactly.
around the field.
Exactly.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So Santiago realizes that he's not the fastest one. And as they're the mass is running, he's running, and he just goes from a run to a walk, and then from a walk to like a very slow walk, and then he gets in 4 legs, and he starts eating grass. And he looks at me and says, "Papa, I'm a cow." And he just starts eating grass in the field because he was a playing cow at the time. He realized, you know what? I'm not going to waste time chasing these really fast people. I'm just going to eat grass and play that
this,
I'm a
this
cow.
Grass, this looks like nice grass.
Yeah.
If
I was a cow, I bet I would love it. You know what? I'm just going to be a cow and see what it's like.
Yeah.
And then Juan went to the car after that.
Yeah.
Cried.
Yeah.
There was the LSU coach, Les Miles.
He would always eat the grass, become one with the field.
Yeah.
he seriously did that. I know he did.
I know. But I always wonder what he did with artificial turf.
In the end, like, how'd that work out for him?
We don't ask that question. No? That's not a question you ask.
Okay.
Yeah.
So here's my sports story. This is from yesterday. So we had a Little Flowers.
Yeah.
Gathering. You were there. Yes. Adam, you were there with your Little Flower.
Anna Faustina.
Little Flowers, you should just look it up. It's a great little organization for young ladies. And so it's at my parents' house. One of the things we were doing is we were having a cornhole tournament. Mm-hmm. I mean, the cornhole... What do you call a cornhole? It's not a goal, a cornhole board.
Yeah.
Close together, right? Because, you know, these are for little kids. But it was a dad paired up with one of their children. And so it was Elizabeth and I paired up, and I knew that was not going to be it was going to be fun, but it was not going to be like a winning combination.
Mm-hmm.
So I was paired up. Our first game was against the Maddoxes. Brandon Maddox, he's the basketball coach for Bixby High School. Okay.
Oh, okay.
He's a winner. Okay. He likes to win, mm-hmm. and he'll verbally tell you that. He's a trash talker. That's
he likes it.
He's a trash talker, right? Mm-hmm. I'm just going to say, for the record, he and I, when we threw against each other, I was destroying him, okay? Mm-hmm. However, I was not destroying him half as much as his daughter was destroying mine, okay?
Oh.
Okay. So, I was watching my oldest, Elizabeth, throw the beanbag, and it was like... Mm-hmm. Okay. We have, you know what? She has so many other talents, so many mm-hmm. other gifts. You know what? Like, it was making me think, like, people talk about athletic ability, but when, like, who gets an award for their compassion? Elizabeth, my eldest, she is compassionate, like, out the wazoo. She will, yeah. like, give up her, mm-hmm. like, oh, she'll give up her candy or her ice cream to one of her siblings mm-hmm. all the time. And it's like, I don't know why you did that. That was amazing. You can't have my ice cream. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah,
so anyway,
yeah.
when she's throwing this beanbag, she's like swinging her arm behind her back. Like, you know, you want to make a nice straight line and then follow through. She doesn't know anything about that at all. She was like this roundhouse arm swinging. You know, I can't believe that some of them landed on the board. But...
Did you coach her?
No. It was
just let this happen.
Like, I realize this is going to be over pretty quickly. We're just
I don't have time to coach. It's yeah. almost over.
We're going
to
have a great time.
You could call time out.
But you know what? Okay, so when
the bear or something.
So we're playing against the Maddox. His little daughter's Marlo. When she was throwing, she was pretty good. Mm-hmm. Elizabeth was over there cheering for her, like, "Oh, that was great! Wow, you can do it!" And it's like, "Elizabeth, we're trying to beat them." You know? So it's like, that's my sports story.
She was practicing the theological virtue of
right.
charity.
She's mm-hmm. like. She's doing great.
Super holy.
As a person, mm-hmm. like, I'm really proud
yeah.
of her.
Yeah.
She's amazing.
I always think it's really funny how someday, many years down the road, our children are going to listen to this, possibly.
I have also thought about
and
that,
they're
and
probably
I was thinking about it before I told the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, the truth is, Elizabeth, if you hear this in years from now and you're older, like, you were terrible at cornhole when you were six, mm-hmm. and that's... That's just the way it was.
Yeah.
I still love you, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Luke, when we put him in T-ball, he...
Oh, this is a good story.
Yeah.
This is a good story.
So, Luke... So, I made the mistake, David. I made the mistake with my oldest. I skipped having a T-ball stand with him. So, I would just start pitching to him.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Underhand, you know,
yeah.
but like...
Yeah.
But this is a kid when he was three... Could take a ball in one hand and a bat in the other, toss the ball in the air and hit it when he was 3 years old.
Yeah. See, this is why this whole like topic is very interesting to me, because my kids are their mom is very athletic and I could play sports somewhat as well. So
Adam,
like,
was the quarterback of Bishop Kelly.
Okay,
so you
okay.
know,
I mean,
so
like,
my kids
yeah.
are
he's
very
an athlete.
Are very athletic and mm-hmm. they're athletically.
I mean,
inclined,
I know
so,
he doesn't look. Athletic at all
in any way,
anymore.
Yeah, at all. But
he looks weak, is what he's.
I mean,
to say,
very
so weak,
yeah.
right?
So,
but back in the day,
I was.
Well, I thought you just turned down a contract with the Cowboys.
No, that was
me.
Him.
That was me.
Oh, that was, okay.
Yeah, I didn't get it picked up. I still didn't get picked
okay.
up. But so I ruined him for T-ball because T-ball to him was boring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at that point, like when you go from coach pitch or you know mm-hmm. you're pitching to just the balls on the stand, mm-hmm. it's boring.
Yeah.
But that was the case, and so he had to hit the ball. So he would hit the ball off the tee, and he would smoke it.
Mm-hmm.
He did not want to run to first base because he knew if he ran to first base, he didn't get to hit the ball again.
Mm-hmm.
So in the games, he would sit there and just crank it off the tee. And, you know, in T-ball, nobody has really positions. They're all just kind of huddled around the pitching stand.
They're very general positions.
You know,
yes.
And he would smoke it past everybody.
Oh.
But stay there and wouldn't run to first base because he didn't want to not be able to hit again.
Oh.
So
okay.
he gave the team time to run out there to outfield, pick up the ball, run all the way back to first base, tag first base.
Out.
He's out.
Mm-hmm.
he's still at home base saying, that's fine. And he's ready to hit the ball again. Huh?
Keep going.
That's maybe in it.
It's pretty funny.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Let's hear yours.
Oh, my. You want a younger
one? No, like, I want the best.
Older kid.
I want the best.
I feel like your kids are old enough now where you could tell the most embarrassing sports story.
Oh. Well, I've got two, actually. They're wildly different.
Okay.
So the youngest one's pretty simple. He, somewhat like one of the other ones, is that he was, I don't know, probably 5 or 6 on a soccer team. And
he ate grass?
He what?
He
did
grass.
Not eat grass.
Okay.
But
Santi's going to hate that story someday, dude.
I know. Yeah, he's going to not like you.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dad.
Yeah. He will never have a phone, though, so no problem.
Yeah.
So our son, I think he was, I don't even know soccer that well, but he was a defender, right?
Yeah.
Back in the back of the field there. And they're you know, doing the, I used to call it the beehive thing. You know,
yeah.
They all run around, just hive. No one sticks to their positions. And so one of the games, he's defender, and they're coming down the field, you know, the, what are they called, the forwards, the attackers, or whatever. And he has struck up a great conversation with a goalie. And they're just sitting there shooting the breeze.
They're riveting.
And, you know, the team just goes right by and scores. And we're yelling at him. You know, of course, he didn't hear.
Yeah.
And,
right.
But, you know, I thought, oh, well, it's all right.
We're gonna stick
at least he's got the gift of gab.
Yeah. Debate. You're going to debate.
Debate. This is right. Debate.
We're,
debate.
I'm enrolling you in Lincoln Douglas tomorrow.
Yes. Yes. So he's... I just thought that was kind of fun. But I have another one, though. I think it's probably good for the dads.
Okay.
So our oldest son was, he went to the high school there in ninth grade. I think he was in ninth grade, yeah. Out in Texas, down in Texas, outside of Fort Worth. And he was a new kid. And he was kind of thin, but he's real feisty. Kind of a brawler type, even though he's very thin and so forth. And so... At one point during the year, some of the football guys were coming up and they'd push him in the locker and knock him down and stuff, and he'd come home complaining about it. So it was a dad moment for me because I said, what am I going to tell my son? Now, this is under the rubric of boxing as
right.
a sport. Okay, so I said, George, I think you have a decision to make here. You can probably let these boys pick on you for who knows how long,
mm-hmm.
or at some point you can turn around and address it, and by that I mean, you know, punch the kid in the face,
right,
as hard as you can. I mean, the next
like really face. Hard,
yeah, like mm-hmm. step back and let him have it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know, a couple of days went by, and I said to, oh, and this is important too, because I told him, I said, George, and you'll probably get in trouble, and that's okay,
because mm-hmm. you know, and it's also only in. You're not just going to like walk up to the guy the next day, right?
No, you got to be pushed in the locker, or
right?
Like
yeah,
that,
it's
or
like
knocked to the ground. So I said, you'll get in trouble, but you know, as your father, I'll respect that, and you know, we'll go from there.
We'll go have a beer afterwards.
Yeah, you know, he's in ninth grade; he's ready for a little argument.
Right? I mean, it's like
yeah. So. You know, my ex, well, I won't digress, but my wife used to get mad at me because I don't know what age exactly, I don't remember, but. We'd smoke briars out, you know, in the backyard sometimes.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, have a good pipe. Now, I mean, I waited there. Certainly probably in high school or,
right.
or close yeah. to college. But my wife never liked that. But anyway, so back to the story. So sure enough, you know, a day or two later, you know, the school principal calls. You know, I just got home my wife because I was at work, but. And so she calls me and goes, well, okay, you did it. You
right.
said it.
Right, right. Yeah. You, totally. She's going like, hey,
yeah.
remember the dad? Advice you yeah. gave yeah. to our so, son.
Right.
This yeah. is your problem, honey.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
And so went down and, you know, he got in trouble. I think he got, you know, kicked out for a day or two or something. But
really? Even though he was, like, being picked on?
Yeah, I think the other kid got in trouble. But It was important because what happened, of course, was he turned around and just cold cocked this kid and knocked him to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to come home for a couple of days, and I was okay with that. We talked about it a little bit. I said, just again, important, you know, to be a man, right? Fortitude, again, back to virtue. Sometimes a man has to do these things. And the great lesson was far greater than anything I ever said to him. Guess what? The next couple days later, I went back to school. Do you think anybody messed with him?
No.
Nope. Never again. Problem solved.
Yeah. Well, don't mess with him because he'll punch you in the face.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You know, and I think, you know, not all parents agree with that particular strategy, but I felt it was the right one.
But there was a time, a certain number of years ago, when almost every parent agreed with that strategy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's... So, anyway.
Yeah. But, times have changed.
There's a balance, you know, and I think some... Maybe, like, some kids have a temperament to understand that kind of response, and some children don't.
Right.
So it's just...
No, and you have to gauge it with your... Yeah. With your... You're right. Your picture child and their temperament, but... I knew our son George at that point. He was just kind of that. He was always feisty, and he would probably do it, and he did.
And also, like, as the parent, I think it's important that you counsel your children. I mean, you have to try to, like, if you have insight into, okay, I know this seems like something that's going to be an ongoing problem. You know, okay, then that's you counsel your children to address that differently than. Mm-hmm. Something that was maybe one time, or, you know,
right?
It's situation.
Not, it's
context
not
is
a recurring thing.
Context
yeah.
is
absolutely
key.
No. And this was repeated.
Yeah,
I mean, days and days and days on end. And you know, he didn't even go to school anymore.
Right.
Right. So it's like, okay, so it's decision time here. Mm-hmm. And you know, you can go to the. I mean, I'm in education, obviously, and I've been a principal and headmaster and all those things. But yeah, you know, the school is going to do what they can do. And there's always a dark corner in a school somewhere where kids can get in a fight or whatever. And
those are, you know, options that need to be explored. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it makes it worse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, hey, right. You know, they told me not to pick on, you know what I mean? Like, because bullies are bullies. And,
that's right. Mm-hmm. That's right.
And there will always be bullies in your life.
Mm-hmm. Always.
So,
you're right. I mean, as adults, we do a little differently. We don't typically punch one another or do those sort of things. But also
a man that I feel like we just get like wussified, like men today, that there are certain times when physical response is the virtuous thing to do.
Yes. I agree.
Like the example I have decided, like I made a, this is a decision I made that if anybody ever insults the honor of my wife, then I am prepared to go to jail.
I agree 100%.
In defending her honor.
Absolutely.
Like, yes.
Yeah.
Officer, I did it. I'm the reason why he looks like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know why? Because he said these things about my wife.
Mm-hmm.
So like, that's a decision I've made. I don't expect that I'll ever have to like actually
carry that out.
Cash that in. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. But dude, if I have to bail you out though, you have to pay me back.
I will.
Okay.
No, David, I think you're absolutely right. But, I think that's
you know,
part
like,
of the role of being a man.
Right.
You defend your wife and your children.
Mm-hmm.
And it in today's culture especially might get you in some trouble. But I think...
Like, toxic masculinity. It's like, no, it's not. You know what was toxic was the guy who was insulting my wife.
That's right.
Like, he's the problem, not me.
No, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. When Laura and I were much younger, we were at a play, Zorba the Greek. I think it was in Kansas City. You know, my wife has this beautiful, you know, big, curly, kind of bushy hair.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we had our seats. It was a beautiful, beautiful performance of it and so forth. Yeah, it's fairly long production. And so, yeah, you kind of tilt your head when you're at the play. I do that. Okay, she has, you know, big head of hair.
Mm-hmm.
And so this guy behind her starts saying rude stuff to her. Like, would you stop moving around and all this? And, you know, she kind of looked at him. I kind of looked at him like, what? And so a few minutes later, he says something else. And I guess I didn't hear that because maybe it was like a, you know, big moment in the play or something. A lot of noise and action on the stage. She kind of nudges me. So I kind of look at the guy, like, you know, I kind of give him that, you know, that look, like, what's your problem? Mm-hmm. I said, anything. A few minutes later, so it was the third time he makes some really smart remark to her. I stood up in the middle of the play at that moment, turned around. I can't actually repeat on the radio here what I said to him. But I said, if you're ready, let's go. Mm-hmm. Right now. Uh-huh. You know, like, let's do it. Or mm-hmm. shut
right
your mouth. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I was...
There's a time for forceful language, you know?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, the play was going on. Everyone was, you know, I was just like, that moment. Mm-hmm. That's it, dude. You just crossed the line.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then he didn't say anything the rest of the night.
Yeah.
What a coward. I mean, like...
Yeah. I mean, to my wife?
Right.
It's like you're sitting right there. You know, like...
I mean, you bought your seat. We bought ours. What's the problem here?
Right.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, so I think that... This,
some people, I don't know if they have something to... I don't know what the deal is. Like, they have something to prove. I don't know.
But, I mean, you Catholic fathers out there, I mean, you... Sometimes you may just have to do that, right? For your spouse or your children. Yeah.
The point that I wanted to make is that, like, I have made a decision about where that line is for me.
Mm-hmm.
And if something had happened in my life before I had made that decision, mm-hmm. I don't know if I would have been able to, like, react the way... I think I may have regretted later on either, like, a lack of action
mm-hmm.
or acting to, you know, like, acting too soon. So it's just, like, something that a man needs to know. Like, where I stand on certain things, what is the, like...
This is the virtue foresight,
where
it is.
Right, yeah. Where I draw the line. And so, in this topic, every man needs to know where is the line drawn mm-hmm. for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is actually the virtue of prudence, because prudence is, we were talking about earlier, part of prudence is making the decision at the right time and the right place.
Mm-hmm. Right, and not mm-hmm. not thinking about it too long.
No.
Prudence doesn't act too quickly, and it also doesn't overanalyze.
Yeah, or delay
the
decision. So, yeah, it's really important, because I'm like you, David. I've had people come up and say very rude things to me and insult me from time to time, and I can take that, right? I'm like, okay, that's, you know.
You can say what you want about me. That's exactly. I'm not going to fight you about that.
Exactly. But you say about my wife.
Right.
Let's go.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's on.
Right.
You know, and.
Because. My vocation, I actually took vows mm-hmm. at the altar that I would honor her.
That's right.
Okay. And so, like, when I go before Jesus, I'm going to have to actually prove whether I did that or not. He's like, he's going to know. And so part of the way I honor her is the way that I uphold her honor.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're the one mm-hmm. who's dishonoring her, well, then you and I have a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's right. And I think, isn't it, we've got this place in the discussion, and it's the year of St. Joseph, and, you know, technically he was the foster father, right, of mm-hmm. the Blessed Virgin.
I would not have wanted to fight St. Joseph. Like,
no, but...
Don't you know he would totally whoop you?
Yeah, what a great model, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he took care of business.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He really did. No, I bet you're right.
Yeah.
I bet he was a tough dude.
Mm-hmm. I'll bet afterwards you'd be like thinking, like, where did he get a staff? Like, that came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Oh, that man. That hurt.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's put a big knot on your head.
Yeah.
Amongst other things.
It's a cudgel.
Mm-hmm.
David, I am very grateful for you coming on tonight. I'm thankful that you said yes to hang out with us this evening. You've been a huge blessing. I thoroughly enjoy working with you. This is what I was telling. I think I was telling Dave and Juan this the other day. Is that it's the first place that I work where I actually enjoy working with the people that I'm working with. You know, fully. You know, like where like I can walk down the hall and say. I like you. I like you. I like you. And not like in an artificial way, but I truly do enjoy working with. So I'm grateful for you to be here in the diocese. You're a huge blessing to the Catholic schools here, but also just the diocese in general. And so I'm really grateful for you being here and working with me.
Thank you. I really enjoy working with you, too. We have a great group there.
We really do. And our team is just like being formed like mm-hmm. every day. It's, just, yes. it's exciting.
It we really do have is. Like the chance. Mm-hmm. Our chancery is... full of amazing people.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like
really good people.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of chanceries around the country are full of people who are like, you know, like not always. Let me like put a little context here. They're very well-meaning people, but not always the most efficient or not always the people who are really the best at the job. They're very willing, mm-hmm. and they're more willing than capable, I think, is the problem with a lot of church offices, right? But our chancery is filled with people who are really exemplary, I think. So, and yeah. like you're a good example of that. I'm also very excited that you're here. So,
well, thank you. A lot of other people over there are a lot better than I am, but what they do. But it's a great group, and I'm just honored to be a part of it and to be here. And I really appreciate you having me on the show tonight. It's been a lot of fun and enlightening. And,
yeah,
you know, for me. And
we'll have you back on. We can talk about something like I don't know. Latin, the use of Latin. I don't know.
We could do a Latin thing. Yeah,
we could do the whole episode in Latin.
And Latin.
Oh, yeah.
It'd be you talking.
It'll be 7 minutes long.
Quid est? Quid est?
Quid est?
Quid est?
Well, we could start in Latin. And then we could just sort of devolve to
pagan English. I have to tell you this before we leave. Have you heard our Latin story for the show?
No, I haven't.
Really funny.
This is...
Brace yourself.
This is brutally, brutally funny. I, you know, at the end of the show, I always say cheers to Jesus. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, you know, that would be cool to look up in Latin.
Yes.
How to say cheers to Jesus. And so I know, I'm almost positive I've told you this story. But
oh, yeah, you asked me about
yes,
this.
Yeah. And so I looked it up on Google Translate, which the thing about Google, they don't know anything about Latin. Okay.
No, they don't.
Like they might
hate
be
Latin.
They might be good at like languages that are still spoken, you know.
Dead languages is not their thing.
But
no,
Latin.
No.
The thing is when they were like whoever the developer was
did not care.
It was not a priority for them.
Right.
And so I typed it in, cheers to Jesus, and it said Iubensium Jesu.
Iubensium.
Iubensium at the end. Iubensium.
Oh, that has something to do with like jubilation.
Okay. Well,
jubilatio would be a noun, I think.
So we were
still kind of a stretch. Okay.
Yes, you
like,
stretch.
So like a couple years ago, we were at Clear Creek recording, and mm-hmm. Father Nesbitt. Mm-hmm.
Father Nesbitt.
He was on the show, and he is also the probably most proficient at Latin among all of the mm-hmm. the monks. And so I said, Iubensium Jesu.
Uh-huh.
And then afterwards, as soon as like we stopped recording, he just starts cracking up. Mm-hmm. And we looked at him. It's like, why are you laughing? He's like, what did you say? Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, it's like I'm gonna teach it. Yeah. Like, oh, well, it means cheers to Jesus in Latin. He's like, no, it doesn't.
No.
What you said does not make sense. It means literally, and I forget what he said, but it like wasn't cheers to Jesus. And
yeah,
I had been saying it for months on the show, thinking like,
you being some what?
Jesu,
okay.
Iubensium Jesu.
Yeah, he seems like it was nonsensical because you were like wishing some sort of good to Jesus,
mm-hmm.
who already
is good.
Yeah,
is
well,
good.
He said that later on that like even like wishing something to Jesus is philosophically, and I was like, well, we're not like wishing him something good. We're just like saying to Jesus, you know, like mm-hmm. drinking. In his, like, to, like, you know what I mean?
To
like,
his honor.
Just to his honor, right, exactly. Right.
He's like, you're wrong in four different levels.
Yeah, you're
okay,
right.
Let me start with the first one, and the second one,
ouch.
And the third.
Yeah. I can think of four different ways that you're wrong.
Yeah. It was
actually, there's five.
so. You shouldn't even say that. So, we should...
Yeah.
So anyway, we used to say Iubensium Jesu at the end of episodes until we found out like only idiots say that.
Yeah. That's a good spot to cut it. That's a good spot to cut it.
Isn't there a famous Latin hymn or expression like Jubilate Deo or something?
Yeah. You're asking.
Yes, there
the
is, but they don't know about it. I know
I
because it's my precious blood. So yeah.
Yes.
Okay, let's cut it there.
Okay.
Let's cut it there.
Jubilate Deo. There we go.
This is Kevin O'Brien of EWTN's Theater of the Word. I'm excited also to teach middle school and high school literature, speech, and drama with homeschoolconnections.com, an online Catholic curriculum provider. Your student can meet with me online for a live, interactive class. Whether you take apologetics with John Martinoni, or grade school with Jackie De La Viaga, or any of the other 400-plus courses with homeschoolconnections.com, online Catholic learning for your homeschooling family is available for you.